Session number 9069, Reel 1.
When the war came along.
Yes, oh yes, yes. Mm. Well, you had to, you see. Mm. But you still had the men in those days was very efficient when the war started. They was all efficient men, you know. Of course, as I say, the war started, we lost a lot of the key men went, you see. Yeah. There were so many people joined up in the war, they had to commandeer the different trawlers, and you see, they had to commandeer different men. And then they started this naval brigade business, and they never had the equipment. See, half the poor bandit was half a soldier and half a sailor. They never had their clothes or nothing to equip the men with, you see. That's my idea. Well, it was, I'm only saying as I think. And,
You were in the
but
Shannon,
I don't,
sorry,
of course. Pardon?
You were in the Shannon all through the war, were you?
No, he was in
Shannon. Sorry. No,
my brother and mine was in the Shannon.
Yes.
Along with Mr. Lowe.
Yes, ah, yeah.
See? This elder brother of mine.
Yes.
Of course, he's dead now. He's a long while ago. He died a long while ago.
What ships were you in during the war?
Pardon?
What ships were you in during the war?
During the war, I went to the St. George.
Yes.
When the war started. Or just before the war started. And when the war, the same day as the war was declared, I was in the St. George, landed Harwich. And Admiral de Roebuck, he flew his flag in the St. George. And when everything was in a hurry, they got raised steam, you know, and the harbour was black with smoke. When the Amphion and all that crowd, you know, and that ship was laying mines outside the Cork lightship. The Konigsberg, I think they called her. She was a ship laying mines, and the war hadn't been declared then, really speaking. But I think the Amphion went out there and see to that. A ship called the Amphion. And then, of course, they raised steam for high speed. And the harbour was thick with smoke, you know. They was all getting up steam at the same time. These all them L boats was lying there.
Yeah.
See, and there was all the raising steam that you couldn't see end before your face. They was all going to their different places of rendezvous, you see. And if some went up the Tyne, some went to Tees, some went somewhere else, you see. Well, then I took a fellow's place. I think he went sick or something. He was in a destroyer called the Dune. Well, us being a parent ship, we had replacements, you see. Well, I was equivalent rating to what he was. See, I had the same rate as he was, seaman gunner. Well, when he went sick, they took me from the parent ship, where he come to the sick bay, and I had to go back to his ship to relieve him. Well, when I got to his ship, which was my ship then, because I was of relief.
Yes.
We went up the Tees.
Yes.
Or the Tyne. I think it was the Tyne. Well, I hadn't been there very long. And all this commandeer and the trawlers was going on, you see. We'd go away in the picker boat and go up to these trawlers and say, well, the Admiralty requires this ship during the war period. All your crew and that will have to be turned over to us, you see. Well, after a while I was up there, then all this lot was going on, and provision and this and provision and that, you see, and trying to kit them up with different clothes. And, of course, they wouldn't wear it off them, fishermen. They wouldn't, they couldn't adhere to the routine of wearing sailor's clothes, you see. So they wear any bloomin' thing until, of course, until the dismal started properly. Then, of course, they had to break into the routine. But anyhow, during that period, the Scarborough raid was on.
Yes.
Just after that. They raided Scarborough, the Bond of Tan, the Sittlets and Mohawk, Durflinger, I think. I think it was four of them. Well, I was in that lot. I went out in this destroyer, the Dune. I think the captain's name was Fraser, I think. And we was out there sculling about there, you know. And I think he made permission to engage the enemy. He could see him at a distance or something, and he wanted to fire at him, a torpedo or something, and I think the answer come back that he was to wait till the operations was taken over by one of the senior officers, you see. A senior man to him, you see. Wait till I come out to take charge of operation. Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I know, whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, I was in that little bit of a juggle. I come out of it all right. But I believe we had, while we was out there, messing about like patrolling, I think they went out there one night and laid a minefield, unbeknown to us, you see. They laid a minefield in a square. And we was out there, you know, keeping a watch and all that business. They must have laid this minefield right round us, unbeknown to us. You see? So all of a sudden, I believe they got a signal on the bridge from the Coast Guard station at Scarborough. Please, could you tell me your position? See? So I think the skipper said to the Bunting, oh, we'll tell him our position, where we are. Well, he said, you're lying right on top of minefield, he said. You're in the minefield, we say, laid so and so. And of course, we didn't know nothing about it, you see. It hadn't been received. So he said to us, everybody aft, he said, and I'm going to get out of this, he said, somehow or other. So he put us all aft on the quarter deck. Blow them swimmer collars up, he said. Of course, we had them half round thing in those days. He blew these things up, and he said, sent for the engineer, and the engineers went up there to yarn with him. I suppose they got chin wagging about something, and whatever it was, I don't know. But I suppose this is what I gather, he said to him, I'm going full speed ahead and try and get out of this lot. It's up to you to give me plenty of speed. Eh? That's what he did do. He either shit or bust, like, you know. So I said, well, I know we went, the backside of our destroyer went down in the bloody water, and away we went. Up or down, I suppose, he thought. He's a good skipper, Fraser, I think his name was.
Which destroyer?
Had no
was this
fear,
one?
Hey?
Which destroyer was this one? Which destroyer was this
one? Well, that was the Doon. A ship called the Doon.
Doon, spelt?
D-O-O-N, Doon.
D-O-O-N, Doon.
An old Ifoxel boat, around the river class.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, then from where I went to the other one called the Foyle. I believe somebody else on the Foyle, you see.
Yes.
Well, the other fellow went back sick and took his place back again where he belonged to.
Yeah.
And I went back to the where I belonged to, the depot ship. And then, of course, when this other fellow went off another ship, I relieved him. I went to the Foyle then. I was what they call ships and backstay. But, you know, I enjoyed it. That was a great experience. And after that, I thought to myself, well, I like these small ships. And I went in small ships all the time after that. I tried to get in them, which I did do. I did manage.
Pretty uncomfortable.
There was more of a ragtime navy, like, and there was no discipline in that, you see. And I thought, well, that suits me.
They were pretty uncomfortable, though, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, because you had it. The accommodation was very poor on those ships, no doubt. But still, that was the best they had for us, wasn't it? I think there was 27 of us all aboard there, all together, seamen ratings. Of course, we carried a 12-pounder gun and 4 3-pounders, a pom-pom. Well, you had a lot of armaments and torpedoes.
Oh, sure. You're a very lucky man, Rob.
Oh, well,
why, dear? I just have to have another one.
Did you?
In the oil, but it'll be all right. It's got a screw attachment, so that...
What a lovely man you are, Stan.
There's the kettle.
Oh, sorry. Got me out of trouble. Oh.
Hi.
Yes. Yes, so... there you are.
So I didn't quite get your name.
Pardon?
I didn't quite get your name.
How you spell your name?
My name is Ralph Westlicott. Ralph Westlicott.
Spelt?
Ralph Westlicott.
How do you spell it?
W-E-S-T-A-C-O-T-T.
Yes.
Ralph Westlicott. Seaman.
Yeah.
What did you enjoy most about the Navy?
Well, I don't know. I don't think none of us liked the Navy much when the war's on. Mm. It's a very uncomfortable living. Mm. It's uncomfortable, especially in the small destroyers and that, you see. But of course, in peacetime, before the war started, the Falling War, I thought there were a lot of the Navy. Mm. Of course, when the war was over, I thought to myself, well, hurry up and get out of it. I was eager. Mm. See, because I'd been through so much.
Yes.
Different things had happened at. In that small period. Mm. He was always on your toes, like, you know, and I wasn't settled. And the Navy was breaking into a kind of a... Well, it was all a muddle somewhere or other by the time when I come out of it. Just after the war, you know.
Yes.
And then they start discharging people out of it, and I left a lot of... people that didn't know what to do or where to go or... how to get a job. It was a proper muddle. And there was no civilian suits like this last war, you know. You had to walk about in a little bit of clothes you had, you see, till you found yourself a job. Yeah. And I was pretty fortunate. Well, when I come out, my father said to me, he was still alive, what are you going to do now? Well, I said, I'm going back to sea. He said, how are you going to do that? I said, I'm going in the Merchant Navy. Well, he said, you just well stopped in the Navy. Well, I said, I don't know, I could have done it, I suppose, but there it is. I said, I wanted to change. So I went and caught one of them oil tankers up.
Oh, you, yes.
One of the war boats. War Nizam. Mm. And I went and saw the... I went and saw the agent down there. Mm. Well, he said, you left her... He said, she's... 90% Navy. Of course, he'd come under what they call the Blue Ensign, you see. And they had to have so many Navy men. Mm. And of course, he was an RNR, the skipper, you see. Well, anyhow, I signed on. Mm. There was no unions attached to it, not there is now. No. There was me and another fella, a chief GI, named Freeman. Mm. He left the service just the same as I did. But of course he had his pension, you see. But we both stepped down at the dockyard and went out, got a ship to take us up to where this oil place is now down there in the Isle of Grain. Mm. And of course they signed us on. And me, him and a chief yeoman of signals, three of us. Mm. He signed us three on. He went as an AB. I went as an AB and the other fellow went as an AB. He went as an AB. Mm. Acton Sigelman. Well, he went out to Tampico. Mm. And went from there to come home. Brought this oil home as far as we could go. Went out again to... Up to New Orleans this time. Mm. Up the Mississippi. And brought the cargo back from there. And from there we went out to Batum in Russia. Got another cargo from there, where they was getting oil to replenish what they'd used during the war, you see.
Yes.
And they was filling up all these tanks as fast as they could do it.
Yeah.
And the oil was getting pretty cheap then from Russia. And I think it was 15 bob a ton, I think, then they was paying for it. Crude.
Yeah.
Well, they was getting the oil from where they could possibly get it, you see.
Yeah.
Well, in Batum, when we got out there, that was very unsettled out there in Russia in those days. Very unsettled. Yeah. And you had to be careful how you trod when you was out there to go. If you went ashore, they'd be after your clothes and everything, you know. So when you got over that gangway, they'd pounce on you and pinch your clothes from you. Yeah. In fact, we won the Loudershaw Bull, right?
Did you find it easy to get out of the Navy? Because you signed on for 12, presumably.
Yes, but not for a pension.
No, but your 12 year... When was your 12 years up, then?
Well, 12 years up in 1924.
Oh, I see. This is when you came out, was it?
Yeah. 1923. Mm. That's when I come out.
I see, yeah.
I finished my 12, you see.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And then everything was in a bit of a jumble up. Mm. And in fact, I was over me time. I was up the Dardanelles when my time was finished. Mm. And I went to the chief writer and I told him, I said, I'm about 3 months over me time, chief. Well, he said, I can't re-engage you here. He said, you'll have to go back to barracks. Mm. He said, we can't re-engage you now. He said, we've got nobody to fill your vacancy. Because I was number two of a 15-inch gun then.
Yes.
See, I was...
Mm. What ship was this in?
It was in a small sovereign.
Oh, a sovereign. Mm.
See, I was responsible. I had a responsible job. Yes. They couldn't get my relief to send me... See? Well, I said, I'm over my time, chief. I said, I'm not going to re-engage you now. Mm. Well, he said, I can't get a relief for you yet. He said, Ralph, you'll have to hang tight with you. I can't get anybody to take your job over. Mm. Said, you're number two of that right gun of ours. Mm. Well, I'd give no thought no more about it. I said, well, I don't know, I suppose. I'm re-engaged, I suppose, unofficially. Mm. See? Naturally, I thought that.
Yeah.
Well, so being over my time like that, I actually thought, well, I was, but they re-engaged me and that said no more about it. Mm. So all of a sudden he came to me, he said, no, Ralph, he said, you'll catch the Concorde, he said. Mm. HMS Concorde. He said, you take passenger to go to Malta. Mm. So I got aboard the Concorde. She was a pumpy ship. Mm. And he dropped me off at Malta. Mm. I went in the agreement and I waited there for about a week. Mm. And during that period, I used to send me ashore on patrol in Malta. You know, he'd give me something to do.
Yes.
Going to report yourself to the Master at Arms. He said down at in Malta, he said, and tell him you're doing a nice patrol down there. See, well, he had to do something to with me while I was waiting passage. So after I was there about a week, this Master at Arms in the agreement said, we got a passage for you, he said, down to Chatham. I said, what ship was that, Master? He said, they just sent the Grafton. Mm-hmm. They sent the Grafton home to Malta, he said, from Novorossiysk. She was laid at Novorossiysk in Russia, you see. Mm-hmm. And they sent her back to Malta. To stop there and pick up anybody passage for the United Kingdom. Well, I was one of them.
Yeah.
So I come home in the Grafton. Very slow movement. She was only about 6 blooming knots. Mm. Took me blooming months to get in. And, of course, when I got into the barracks, I had to see all the blooming different people, you know. Mm. Oh, I said, You're going there, aren't you? Mr. Cotter, I said, yes, I hope later on, I said. I said, I've been a long while thinking about it. You want to go out? I said, yes. I said, I believe I've got a job to go to, which I never had. Mm-hmm. I could have re-engaged, I believe, if I'd have wanted to. Mm-hmm. But I was so determined. Mm-hmm. And also I got out of it and... I went home and my old father said, what are you going to do now? After spending all your time in the service and you went to that school, he said, had a good... Now you've left it. I said, I'll go back to sea again, Dad. Mm. Well, what's the good of coming out the Navy and going back to sea?
Yeah.
See?
Mm. What did you think of the officers?
Well, some good ones. I met some good officers. Mm. Genuine officers. Oh, yeah. Of course, some of them you've got to be very careful about, you know. But as regards the officers I contacted, they were all pretty helpful to me. In one way or another, they were pretty helpful if you paid attention to what they were telling you. Now, I had a commander in the Dominion. He used to punish you by according to the crime you committed. Mr. Thomas Norris. My name, he said, is David Commander Thomas Norris. They said, we'll have a good commission if you pay attention to what I'm going to tell you. That was his introduction.
Yeah.
So, I think I was a young OD then. Mm. I was on the Dominion. I was up there one day doing me work, or something I was doing. Yeah. I was working, I suppose, or supposed to have been. And I said to this chum of mine up there by the former funnel, I said, Lobo, where comes Cook up here? He was coming around on the shoulder deck, see? Mm. He said, come here, he said. Oh, what you said, he said. I said, I beg your pardon, sir. I said, I just... He said, you warned him, he said. I was coming along, didn't you? I said, yes, sir. He said, you must have been up to some mischief. Well, I said, I was only telling him to... I wasn't up to mischief, sir. I was only natural I should warn him that you was a bat. But he said, look here, he said. Now, you go up on that bandstand up there, he said, where the short side is, he says. He said, and every time the bell strikes, he said, you sing out, Lobo, here comes Cook.
But you didn't sing that one out again.
So, well, I didn't get up in this place. He louder than that, he said, they can't hear you. Every time that means struck the bell, I had to sing out. Punish you to suit the crime.
Yeah.
But he was a nice chap, he wasn't bad. He'd done it in his own way, I suppose. Mm. I'll shame him, he said. He thought it was all, I'll shame him. And that's what he'd done, you see. Yeah. Well, that was better than face and paint work.
Yes, yeah.
See, when you come to look at it.
Yes.
You stand up there face and paint work for about a couple of hours. It's deadly, you know.
Did you do number 10?
No, he amused himself, and he amused the ship's company, he amused me as well, really speaking.
Yeah.
So I was a bit shameful of having to do it.
What do you think of number 10A's?
Oh, it was a very crude job.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot of it, but I tried to keep out of it as possible, but sometimes you couldn't help it.
Mm.
Something you'd happen to you, and you wouldn't know that happened, and you'd be before the commander or the captain or... or whatever it might be, and you wonder how the devil you got there. Mm. I had a fellow, you know, in the ship. He was a dead spit on me. And I used to take the can back sometimes for him, and he used to take the can back for me.
Mm.
You know, perhaps he'd be up to something. See? Perhaps I'd be punished for what he'd done, and perhaps sometimes he'd be punished for what I'd done.
Yeah.
Some features was the same, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, he was saying, what have you been up to this blooming time? He said, what have you been up to? He said, I've been on the blooming car, but he said, over you.
What about shore leave?
Pardon?
What about shore leave?
Oh, I used to go ashore when I had any money.
Mm.
You didn't have a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
I'd go ashore in ports or in... Of course, I had done a certain lot of time in one of the monitors when the war started, you know. I went to the Prince Rupert. She was a monitor. And we used to go across to Belgium.
Mm.
Find that the bombarding the coast and that, you see. But when we got back to Dover, I used to have a dip ashore. Because it was all blacked out, it wasn't much enjoyment there. Place was blacked out, all the first thing you'd done while you went ashore was to go in the first door and pub and have a couple of drinks, and that's all you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you were all prepared to go across the next day to shove a few more rounds at them.
Mm-hmm.
Had a 12-inch gun then we had, two 12-inch guns. I think we fired one night, and the blooming gun got red hot. Yeah, had a pack up. Had a gun you could coast a bit of bread and butter on. Yeah, the water of the gun, red hot. Pack up, for God's sake, we both didn't think. We blow ourselves up, we carry on like this. Officer of the turret. I think we'd about 40 or 50 rounds. the night. Of course, the war was a gun. Yeah. You couldn't blast it out quick enough. Mm. I don't know where them poor buggers who was ashore, where them Germans ashore might have felt about it. Right in the trenches, we were smacking them, you know. The trenches was parallel to us, yeah. You see. And I was just fine right in them trenches, yeah. So we were supposed to be in, of course, whether we was or not, I don't know. Yeah, that was the idea we had of it, you know. Might have been the French trenches for all I know. I think the people, the powers that be, knew what was happening. But I didn't. All I knew, I was doing a lot of sweating. They kept you going in them turrets. You don't know what's going on outside, you know. You're closing in the turret.
Yes.
All you can hear is the banging and slashing and somebody shouting out. Mm. What's going on outside, you don't know.
At that time you were an ammunition number, were you?
Oh, no, I was number two.
Number two on the gun.
Second captain of the gun. Mm.
Yes. What was your job then?
Opening and closing the bridge and in charge of everything that happens behind the gun, loading and all that.
Yeah. Number one's the layer. Yes.
He's the captain of the gun.
Yes.
Number two's the second captain of the gun.
Yes.
If anything happens to number one, number two takes his place. Yes. And so and that's how it goes, you see. Number three becomes number two.
Yes.
Number two becomes number one. But when you're in the turret firing like that, you don't hear nothing, you don't know what's going on at all. All you can hear is the clatter of the rammer and the oist, the ammunition coming up in the oist.
Yeah.
And everybody shouting and singing out. And, and hot, the heat of the blasts coming back through the glass bags.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on.
Mm. What did you have in your ears? Cotton
nothing,
wool?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
That's why I'm deaf in one ear now.
Yes, yeah.
When that first went off, that gun, that's the first time ever I heard a live round go off. A 12-inch. God. The shot come back, the gun recoil here about 8 or 9 feet, you know. Whew. Mm. I was only a kid. You know? Mm. I looked at the other book and thought, well, they're all right, I must be all right. Yeah, it's a sensation.
Yeah.
First experience, but after you've been there a little while, of course, you get to an old stage and you try to encourage the other boys with the other lads, you see.
At no time did people wear anything in their ears at all?
No, in those days they didn't. No. Of course, unless you'd done it voluntarily, you could stuff a bit of cotton or wool or something in your ears, which I ought to have done, which I didn't do, you see.
Mm.
But there's an awful... when you're inside of a turret, you don't know what's going on outside at all. Of course, you're all closed in, you see.
Yes.
Therefore, you can't tell anybody what's really happening.
Yeah.
You might be in the Jutland Battle, but you're inside of a turret, you don't know what's happening outside.
Yes. Mm. And the only people who really saw what was going on with the signal.
Yes, you've got to be on deck to see what's really happening. The only bloke who can give who gives a good report of that, was Commander King Hall, I think, is about the best.
Yeah, that's a good
the best yarn I've heard of the job. Well, he was on one of them ships.
Yes.
As a young lieutenant, I believe, and he was taking notice of everything that was going on. You see.